The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to Mission Minded. Keep your mind and your mission and your mind. He's Michael Coleman. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank down there in beautiful Montgomery, Alabama. They service 35 different counties, of course, right here in the great state of Alabama, and through Feeding America, do wonderful work. Michael, how you doing, brother? You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing really well today. Glad. I look forward to coming to work, man. I look forward to being with you on Mondays.
And, I look forward to having you on as well, too. I was talking to my son earlier today. He will probably make an appearance because my dog is sitting behind me. He'll probably sometime during the show, if you ever watch the show, you'll see him walk in here and he'll pick up the dog and walk back out. Doesn't say a word. But I told him today, I said, you know what, son? I said, whatever you do, it's my special needs boy. So no matter what you decide you want to do in your life, I said, just make sure that you enjoy what you're doing. Yeah. I said, I cannot tell you enough. That I have a lot less friends making $40,000 a year who love what they do than people that are making $340,000 a year but hate going to work. I said, it's not worth it. It's just, I mean, I don't know how to tell you. And it's hard to tell these kids these days because they get out of college, they think they're going to get a $200,000 job right off the bat. And they sure as hell don't want to work for free. You know, we used to do these things called internships. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Where you used to go, internships.
Yeah, you used to show up and go work at somewhere, you know, for free for like a year.
That's
you
right.
Whether it's filing records or, you know, putting files.
You just got your foot in the door to get to prove yourself.
You know, golly.
And supposed to get me paid for it.
If you're a go-getter and you believe in yourself, just to get your foot in the door should be enough. I mean, because they're not going to have you do an internship there if they don't want to eventually hire you. Anyway, so I said, promise me you'll just, you know, you'll do something that, you know, is fun and you enjoy it. And I thoroughly enjoy radio, but not only because I get these interviews, but because of people like you who I consider one of my best buds, and I just love speaking with you. And I mean, even if we weren't doing a show, I think you and I would probably catch up two or three times a week and just talk about
it. Sure.
That's great. So today we're going to do a little role playing. Do you have your French maid outfit on?
But I'm a little high-waisted, so they never look real good on me, I got to be honest.
Yeah, so we came up with this article, and we've done a take on this, but we're going to mix it up a little bit, and this is your idea. It's great. 14 signs you work at a toxic company and how your company just, quite frankly, doesn't care about you. And I do think they're in the spirit of employment and employees right now. I do think because it is so easy to find a job right now, it really is kind of come to a head. You know, we got people that used to work from home, that have a lot more say now. When jobs are hard, you have no say as an employee. Right now, I would say employees probably have as much to say about what they're getting at work than they ever have probably in the history of this country. Would you not agree with that?
No, I would agree.
I mean, you can go in there with three or four of your buddies and say, listen, you know, we want a Starbucks in the corner of the kitchen or else we're quitting. They'll probably put it in for you. So, but there are still businesses, depending on how things balance out, that still run some toxicity, if you will, up and down their hallways. And so I wanted to play today where I'm the employee and you're the boss. And I want to throw a couple things because I'm sitting in your office, Mr. Coleman. I want to call you Mr. Coleman because you're my boss. And I'm just going to throw a couple of things that I'm concerned about, in the company. I thank you again for your time. Mr. Coleman, I know you're super busy. First of all, how's your family and friends doing? Well, that's everything okay with your family?
Let's just cut the chit chat and just get right to it. Why are you in my office?
I've noticed here recently that I've gone to my superior and I've had a couple of really good ideas that I thought would actually help us perform at a higher level with more efficiency. But it doesn't seem like he ever wants to get any of my input or any of my ideas. He kind of blows me off. And I was wondering if you could help me out there.
Well, you know, as a CEO, I want a company where everybody feels like they have input and they have some suggestions. So if you feel like you're getting shut down, I get your conclusion may be that we're not that company, but have you thought about when exactly you're bringing those up? Mm. So for instance, if y'all are out there on a job and he's saying, let's do it this way, are you the one out there slowing down progress, debating, saying, well, there's another way? Or do you wait till the job is over, request some time when he's not under pressure, he or she is not under pressure, you go into their office, and then you say, hey, we did this today. I had some thoughts of how maybe we could do it more efficiently or effectively. If that gets shut down, then I'm concerned about that. That's when I want it elevated up to me, because you probably do have some really great ideas that I want to hear. But when you share those, it is of utmost importance. And not only that, but how you share it. So, for instance, if the foreman feels like, hey, based on his 20 years of experience, this is the best way to do it, mm-hmm. you come along, you offer a suggestion, it might be, it might ultimately be a better suggestion. But you have to also understand there's a human dynamic that this is his way. Who are you to challenge his way? And it can come across, depending on your tone, depending on how you're stating it, it could come across as you're a know-it-all, or it could come across as, you know, you think you know better. What we used to say back, I'd hear my grandfather say, the young whippersnapper, mm-hmm. you know, kind of mindset. So I want to hear your ideas. I want to make sure you're not getting shut down for other reasons other than your ideas.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up, because I believe, and you know my superior, I believe that perhaps he may be moving on. I think up and down the hallways I'm hearing he's moving on, so his job may be open for discussion. And I've realized the last three times there's been a promotion in my office, I've gotten passed over for it, particularly with a person that came in well after I did. They got the job and I didn't. I was wondering, what could I do to improve my chances, and why am I getting passed over for these promotions?
So in your last couple of evaluations, were you given anything to improve on in your job performance, or the way you present yourself, or any sort of ways to improve?
Yes. I was told I run late and I have a strong body odor.
Well, Stinky, I don't know what to tell you.
So why would someone get passed over for a promotion?
Well, it, and that happens. What I want to make sure is the best, what I encourage employees to do is, if you're given anything and asked to improve on it, don't wait till a full year. You come back in 90 days and say, hey, I would like a new assessment because I'm trying to improve and I've implemented some personal things. So after 90 days, I don't want to wait 365 days to get it. Tell me, are you seeing improvement? And if you are you seeing significant improvement, a little bit of improvement? Give me other things that I can do. That's your supervisor's responsibility. And if they're not doing that, then that's a failure on their part. Secondly, it may be there's several factors that go into you applying for a job that comes open. So, you've been here a while. So the employers know you very well. They know what you're capable of and what you're not capable of. And so these may be positions that when the job description comes out, are you looking down and making sure that you do in fact meet the educational requirements, the physical requirements, all those kind of things, the experience requirements, mm-hmm. all those kind of things. If you are, then our company policy is that you at least should be interviewed for that position. Have you been interviewed for any of these jobs?
No.
Okay. If you've not been given an interview, then that's something that I need to address, because anybody who meets the qualifications that are posted, the idea is anybody in our organization who meets these qualifications and desires a higher position should be granted an interview. Now, once you are in the interview process, then you're going to be interviewed same questions, same way as everybody else. If you are then not chosen, what I require my interview people to do then is give you feedback as to exactly where you fell short in comparison to the other people who were selected, so that you at least at a minimum leave there understanding what you need to improve on. So, and this comes with communication, and communication is hard for leaders. It's hard for people who aren't in leadership positions. One of the things I think is very important is, especially with somebody who's striving, because I'm going to tell you something, you go into any organization, three quarters of the people are not really looking to move up. A lot of people want to move up like they want more money, but they really aren't looking for, I want to take on more responsibility. I want to be called, you know, have more people's eyes on me. They really don't want that. They want more money for the job that they're doing. So anytime I have somebody in my company that's interested in stepping up, say, no, I want this position and all the responsibility that comes with it, that's somebody, I'm like, they have the right heart. Now let's see how we can further develop them. And I'll even go so far as to say this. If there's a weakness that you have that involves training, like leadership training and things like that, well, you're not going to get that until you're put in that position or until we very intentionally provide you the education that's necessary, like through leadership courses, leadership training, things like that. So I will commit to doing that with you and providing that for you so that you have an opportunity to move up.
All right, off the record, how do you know if you're going to the right person to get a promotion? In a lot of cases, I may have an immediate boss, and then he's got a boss. I had a program director, then I had a GSM, then I had a GM. And if things weren't getting done at the immediate level, my PD, then I felt the need to go, or at least make the small threat. Hey, listen, sure. if you're too busy to listen to this, I can always go to Davis over here. And obviously you got to be careful because that's the guy I got to answer to every single day. How long do you wait when you're trying to move forward on something? It may be their position that you're going for. Maybe that's why they're not pushing it along, because I give you more responsibility, now you're cutting in on my rug a little bit, but or is it okay just to go straight to the top?
No, typically not. Most people are going to go back to the old military mindset of you have to utilize your chain of command. How it was in the military, because the fear was, especially with something like I'm being sexually harassed, or maybe the problem I have is with my supervisor. Maybe my supervisor is verbally abusing me. And so the rule in the military generally was, I need to speak. So you had a chain of command, you had your immediate supervisor, and let's say you had three layers of supervisors all the way up to the commander or CEO. If your problem was not with your first line supervisor, then you take the problem to your first line supervisor, explain the problem, and you try to work it out at the lowest level possible. If you don't get satisfaction from that, and satisfaction doesn't mean you get it your way, it just means they're not giving you adequate attention, then you say, you go back to him and say, I am requesting an appointment with this because I'm not satisfied with where we've gotten to. And that was always granted, but you had to go through your chain of command. And it's especially difficult when your problem, though, is your first line supervisor. Because you say, I want to talk to the next level. And they go, well, wait a minute, you're supposed to give me a chance to fix it. And people go, but my issue is with you. That gets incredibly awkward. And a lot of people, because they don't like confrontation and they struggle with that, they just shy away from it and they just continue in the same situation. But there's always exceptions. I would say most companies are interested in solving problems, especially one that's, it's not just, you know, sometimes we can get pretty petty as people and we get to focusing on something and get obsessed about it. And then it blows up. And you look at it in the grand scheme of things, you're like, this is really not a serious issue. So, but if the issue is that supervisor, they're not, then you just let them know, I'm going to request, and you can request that through email, text, whatever the company's policy is. But I always think it's good that you let your first line supervisor know, I'm going to the next level because either my issue is with you or I don't feel like you you were able to adequately address my issue. And so I'm raising the level. Because if you don't tell him, then it looks like you're going around him.
Yeah,
and you're not informing him, and that's kind of blindsiding. And that's not fair.
No, and that is the worst thing you can do. I mean, if you really want to build some trust there. Now, unless you know this person is fixing to be gone or getting fired, or you just don't really care.
Yeah.
But I've done that. I've gone around. First of all, don't threaten to go around because it's as good as doing it.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, do it. And you better have your guns loaded. You better have a good reason because they're gonna call that person in. And next thing you know, you're going to have that three-way. You're going to have that awkward situation. Well, Tony's been asking about this and was wondering why this hasn't been done, blah, 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 blah. And it's going to
go. I've been in situations where, I mean, on both sides of this, when I was very young in the military, you know, and you selfishly want what you want and your first line supervisor is not responding the way you want to. So you run into somebody at the dining facility, you run into his boss and you're like, hey, I've been trying to talk to you. So then they call you into a room and now everybody's in the room. It's not a he said, she. I mean, you're all in there. And the next line supervisor is going, okay, you mentioned you had this problem. And then your first line supervisor turns to you and go, you never came to me with that. And well, I didn't, because last time I brought something to you, I didn't like how you know. And so it ends up coming back where you got mucho egg on your face.
Yeah.
When that happens. And so, and you can lose credibility because you can look like you're somebody who is difficult to appease, that you are always looking for a problem. You've always got a complaint. You've always got, in other words, you can't adapt to the situation. You can't get on board with the company called. And the reason you and I were talking about flopping this back and forth, like one from the employee perspective, both sides can have, just because an employee thinks this is assesses and says this is a toxic workforce doesn't necessarily make it so.
Yeah.
It may mean that they come into a workforce with their perspective and they don't want to bend on their perspective. The company culture, it may not be perfect, but they're not willing to adapt to the culture. They want the culture to adapt to them. And so sometimes their assessment is, oh, that place is toxic over there. But really it's a lack of maturity on the worker understanding that I'm coming into an established group of people that have their own dynamic, how they talk, how they communicate, how they joke, how they function on a day-to-day basis. The vast majority of adopting has to come in my part, is on my shoulders to adopt to them, not get a whole organization to, adapt.
Yeah.
Get a whole organization to adapt to me.
We're talking about toxicity in the workplace and how to find out if your business really cares about you and your input and what you could do into it. Depending on what your position is and how long you decide to work at this particular job, is it a stepping stone job or just something you're going to be in for a long haul? Sometimes I did not want to know what was going on above me.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I didn't see the GM for months, that was a good thing. Sometimes when I saw the GM a lot, it was a bad thing. But for the most part, you want to be included in things that you should be hearing up and down the hallways. In other words, if you feel like you're the last person walking into the rumor mill every single day, that could be in lines of you're in trouble. Share a little bit about that, because there are rumors, there are things that go up and down the hallways. And if you're that last person that knows everything, that may be fine for you. Maybe you don't want to know, but you may not find out. You may be the last one getting fired too.
So I've dealt with people who have accused me of oversharing, and there's a pro and con to it. There are people tend to understand if a company is not in trouble, but if something's going on, because usually they sense a little bit more tension or there's finance, you know, something gets out. And so what begins to happen is people will naturally fill in the gap, okay, because they will begin to speculate and they're like, hey, you know what, that makes sense. And so there's a piece of the puzzle, and then they'll start talking about that as if that's fact, and then they add other pieces of the puzzle and they create a whole narrative and stress out a whole bunch of people. And it's actually very detrimental because you have to go back and break all that down. Now, there's a risk taking my approach, which is I tend to overshare and be very open in that there still can be miscommunication. People can take a little bit of information and run with it and do the things that they want to do, or it could leak outside of the organization when maybe it shouldn't. So, I mean, I get that. But I've used this example before, so forgive me if our audience has already heard it. But, yeah. You know, I revert back to so many things I learned in the military. One of the things I learned in the military was if only a couple of people who are in charge and they're going on a maneuver and they know they've got to, let's use the old adage of, you know, going to take this hill. If nobody but the leadership knows what's going on, like the objective is really not the hill, it's the hill behind the hill, or it's to wipe out whatever, however far they have to go. When people get separated on the battlefield from their leadership, then they're clueless. They might run right on, you know, because they just say, hey, we were moving in this direction, I'm going to keep moving in this direction. But if you get scattered and you get separated, but everybody's been briefed on what the objective is, what the true objective is, then American soldiers are great at adapting and saying, okay, I'm not going to run straight up the hill. I'm going to go around the hill, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because I can still accomplish the objective, even though I don't have anybody looking right over my shoulder. I feel like in a business, if you inform everybody on down to the very lowest level, entry-level positions, and of course not with every detail, or not with details that they don't have a place to put that. I don't go talk to my warehouse guys about fundraising and, you know, get their perspective, but I do talk about things that affect them, and I don't and I try to share with them, so that if their supervisor's not there looking over them, they're like, well, Michael said this is really important to really focus on this. I can do those things. I don't have to be supervised, so they can work more independently. And so if you have a bigger picture, to me, it keeps, because when somebody speaks up and says, well, I think this, and they're like, no, Michael said very specifically, this was how much we were getting paid, or this was what was going to happen. You shut down the rumor mill and the grapevine, so at least to some degree, with more facts. And people feel empowered when they have more education, information. They feel like they're part of a team and that they can work independently, versus just the, yeah, I come here where I punch a clock and I just wait for somebody to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
It's just a different existence. Does it come with potential problems? Of course. Yeah, absolutely. There's risk. And I've been bit by that a couple of times, but I think it's still better than the alternative.
Mr. Coleman, I've noticed several times that whenever I brought my wife and family around the office, you call my wife by the wrong name, and you're using a plural for my daughter as opposed to just calling her. She doesn't really like that. It seems like you really don't care much about my family. You really don't know much about my personal life at all, despite the fact I've been here for 3 years. Is there a reason why you just don't really care? Is it just because you separate business from pleasure? What's going on there?
Well, here's what I can tell you.
Are you sleeping with my wife?
No, I'd probably know her name if I was. No, but I will tell you, that matters to people. We're kind of going off the script. Right now. Yeah, that matters to people. And sometimes I have been confronted by, well, I see you laughing and joking with these people. You seem to know them more intimately. You spend more time with these than you do these other people. And so my response would be, well, let me offer you this perspective. If I have 50 people, that's 50 spouses, and I get to see people. I work in one building. We have 5 buildings. I'm going to see some people more. I'm going to get more familiar. What I want to assure that person is I'm not ignoring him intentionally because he has less value in my mind. I'm going to be like, there's other people in the organization. First of all, I would apologize. And yeah. I'd say, I want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for bringing this to my attention. It's something that is not one of my strengths, is remembering names, and I need to do better. Having said that, I want you to see a bigger perspective, which is I've got 50 employees at the entry level. Some come in and out all the time with through temp agencies. They've got their issues. They've got their significant other, their girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. They've got children. It's hard for me to learn all that. Please don't take it as I don't care about you, your wife, and your family. First of all, I want to please apologize to her, and I'll apologize to her next time I see her, and I'm going to make it a point to learn them because you are important to me. And that's really what an employee wants is yeah. I get it because I've done it before. I've made somebody feel less than because I greet them in the hallway, whereas I may hang out and drink coffee with other people. And they're like, oh, I'm not in the in group.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you make a whole organization in the in group? I personally don't believe the alternative is, well, I've just got to say hello to everybody. I can't have intimate relationships with anybody because if I can't have them with everybody.
Yeah.
There's just going to be some people as a boss that you jive with, your personality with, you happen to see each other more often, you have common interests, whatever they may be. What you really have to, and I really do work hard on this, is to try to make sure when any decision is made that the same standard is applied to the people that I joke around with as the people I don't joke around with. So in terms of promotion, everybody has to follow the same procedure. Everybody has to follow the same. And, you know, all of that is the same. And I have to make sure that I don't deviate, because the first time I deviate, then it becomes special treatment.
Do we have, and this is the end of our interview process. Thank you very much, Mr. Coleman. Do we have better bosses now than we did in the 50s and 60s and 70s, do you think? Or are we better at community? It's always communication. It just seems like we're not communicating very well. And that goes from the bedroom to the relationships with our marriages to in the workplace. Are we getting better or are they getting worse? Because it seems like we with technology, we'd be getting worse at it. But is it forcing our hand a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, the bosses that you see now, a lot of this was just stuff you see on TV, but back in the 50s and 60s, you know, it was like, show up here, you do your job, you start complaining. Even if the complaints were legitimate, I don't want to hear that, man. You know, shut up and do your job. I don't even hear a lot of that nowadays. I think most people, when you see there's all sorts of articles and education on LinkedIn, there's books. I think there's a genuine interest among leaders to say, I don't want to be a boss, I want to be a leader. And that means I've got to be able to assess myself honestly and then determine, okay, here's what a good boss looks like. Now, how do I match up against that? And what areas do I need to change? I think more people are willing to look within themselves because they know they want to get the best out of their employees. Now, I will tell you, on the other hand, I think the culture has the pendulum swung the other way on employees. Not that employees are less capable, but from an attitude perspective, the dynamic's totally different.
Yep.
So, because back in the 50s and 60s, if you got a job, you were coming into 18, and lots of times, especially if it was a good job, you were like, well, this is going to be my place. I'm going to be here forever.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't think of things as a stepping stone. That's one thing. So you had a lot of loyalty to the company, but you came in every day, and it was just everybody had a work ethic. I mean, especially if you came from a farm and stuff like that, or came from out in the country, you had a work ethic, and you knew how, you know, because you had to be on time everywhere you were, and you had to put forth your best and very respectful, and you didn't worry about what other people were doing. You were in there to make your living. And today with Gen Z and even the people coming in behind Gen Z, and there's some challenges. It's not to say you don't hit some real jewels, some real diamonds, because there are people out there that are brought up right, that have a strong work ethic, that care about other people, that don't have the world revolves around me mindset. You know, they want to come in, they want to be productive. But it's not the norm that it used to be.
Yeah. I'm finding this, and I say this to my son all the time. You're an extrovert. You like to meet people. You like to get out and do things, and you're good with eye contact and shaking hands. Just don't see it with this next class. I say next class, this next generation, where they just don't dig their heels in and really, it's just the way they shake their hands, the way they look at you, the way they're always waiting to be asked a question before they actually, they always need to be greeted first. I mean, I know I'm broad brushing here. Yeah.
One of the things, I've got four grandkids and of course, look, I'm also addicted to my phone. I realize I'm just as bad as everybody else. But one of the things, you know, that I see with the issue of the phone, forget the content of what you're looking at. There's a whole nother discussion. But if you think about it, when you're locked in on a phone, you're interacting and you're speaking in your mind, but you're not using. Now, I used to be, when I grew up, and it'd be a Saturday, you know, there'd be cartoons for a few hours. I had three stations. You shut that off. Now you're outside. Mm-hmm. And you're getting up neighborhood guys to go play a game of pickup football or whatever, pickup basketball, and you play, but there was social interaction. You were learning social cues, like, oh, wait a minute, I hurt his feelings when I said that, or, hey, this was not appropriate. I mean, just those small things that you don't think about in group dynamics.
Yeah.
That you learn as you develop, and then you would carry over into the workplace as an adult. You would learn because you were out there doing. Now, if we're so isolated, not only are you isolated on a phone, but when you get a bunch of teens together, they don't know how to converse, and especially don't know how to initiate conversation. Because my grandkids will sit around and I'll ask them, hey, what are you doing? But it's like pulling information. They don't even have anything in front of them. You know, yep. We're in the car. It's pulling information. They don't tend to think. And I'm like, well, let me ask you this. I mean, I used to pepper my grandparents with questions. You know, tell me about what you did back then, or what does that look like? And have you ever done this? And I've heard about this. And, you know, and they're just kind of locked in unless you get them talking about something on a game or something that they're engaged in.
Yeah.
It's tough to do. So yeah, all sorts of challenges. It's all sorts of differences, but you know, I guess every generation, you know, we come up, we blame them, just like the song says, we blame the one before. You know, And then we come up, and then we blame the ones behind us.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's switch this up next week. Let's switch the role playing. Let's keep our same roles, but I want you to pepper me with some things you're concerned about my work ethic, and why I don't do things that you ask me to do, or why I do certain things the way I do them. And I hope you don't mind that, you know, I'm dating the girl back in HR. No big deal. Promise you wouldn't be a problem.
Depends on what you mean by dating.
Exactly. So come up with some of those for me next week, and then I'll see if we can clear the air, and perhaps we can further this conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you, man.
I enjoyed it, bud.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.